an agricultural empire, the fulfillment of the dreams of pioneers, unexcelled in beauty, rich in achievement, and still offering a challenge mighty as the mountains. This is our Northwest Empire.
I'm Felix Bunnell, resident historian for Cairo Radio, heard with Dave Ross Wednesdays and Fridays on Seattle's Morning News. On this episode of the Resident Historian podcast, a Tacoma man is eager to share his collection of pandemic-themed beer cans from local brewers.
What they started to do was pull on different themes of life adjusting during the global pandemic. I thought that was really interesting, thought it could be a unique addition to the collection for Washington State Historical Society.
And then, from the archives, the history of the iconic Wilburton Trestle in Bellevue. But first, let's go all over the map.
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
Our resident historian Felix Bunnell joins us every Friday morning for All Over the Map, which is a quick look at the stories behind local places and things, including old maps and photos like those at the Seattle branch of the National Archives, which now is officially no longer for sale. Congratulations. Yeah.
Well, I had just a tiny part to play, of course. You know, the news came yesterday from the acting director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. They've formally withdrawn their approval from January 2020 that allowed the sale of that building, which sits on 10 acres near Sandpoint, to proceed. Now, the approval came just a year ago, 10 days after Cairo Radio had broken the news the facility had been targeted for closure. All of its contents, priceless maps and photos, would be moved to California and Missouri. Now, I thought about this a lot last night. I have just a couple observations about how I think the archives were saved I will now share very quickly. One is that in the wake of the news, a very diverse bipartisan coalition formed around opposing that sale. Republican Secretary of State Kim Wyman, Democrat Attorney General Bob Ferguson, Republican and Democratic senators and representatives from all four states affected. Pretty amazing coalition, plus lots of tribes. Two, Bob Ferguson deserves the most credit for taking action to actually slow down the sale and eventually bring it to a legal halt. I mean, he was suing way back in the summer to get access to documents as part of the legal process. And it was clear that the agencies involved, mostly the OMB, but also this obscure Public Buildings Reform Board, they either had something to hide or they believed they could flout the law. And then three, I think Bob Ferguson gets credit again for recruiting a really diverse group of plaintiffs to join that lawsuit. You know, the city of Seattle, the state of Oregon, and nearly 30 tribes. I think it was Brandon Rainin of the Puyallup tribe who told me that the unity among the tribes around this issue rivaled the unity among tribes around what ultimately became the Bolt decision restoring fishing rights 45 years ago. And it was a staffer in Ferguson's office who noticed back in the fall that the Public Buildings Reform Board was moving to expedite the sale. And then the AG daylighted that and kind of increased the urgency of the lawsuit that was eventually filed and which led to the injunction in February. And that ultimately bought enough time for this new Biden administration, who's very committed to working closely with tribes, to take that official action yesterday and withdraw the approval of the sale. As far as what comes next, this is what the Attorney General told me yesterday.
As great as this victory is today, it's incumbent upon our congressional delegation to find the resources to get the facility in the shape it needs to be in or find a new facility that can house these records. That is the ultimate victory, but this is a big step along the way.
Yeah, so now it's an opportunity to take that tired old building, which doesn't have a very high public profile. Very few people knew it existed until this came up a year or so ago. But let's make that an actual showplace for federal records and show this how much people in these four states really care about this stuff remaining here and make it, you know, program it, make it something people can visit and be excited about.
And let's remember, it didn't just come up spontaneously. It came up because you mentioned it.
Well, we had a great Cairo listener who tipped me off about the fact this thing was going to be announced. We broke the news, and then we've just dogged it for the last year or so. But a really amazing coalition of groups and people made this really happen. So it's definitely worth celebrating, but there's a lot of work to do.
This is why we're proud to call you our resident historian, Felix Bunnell, our history activist, our hacktivist. Anyway, have a great weekend, and congratulations.
Thanks, Dave. You too.
Washington State Apples. The fruit that's good for you.
Our resident historian, Felix. It is a beer, isn't it? Yeah. Felix Bunnell, museums all over America have been collecting artifacts of the pandemic with an eye toward future exhibits that will look back at this era. It's a lot of masks. It's a lot of printouts of test results. But our historian Felix Bunnell says a man in Tacoma is on a mission to find a museum home for something a little more colorful and refreshing. Felix is sponsored by the King County Library System. Good morning.
Morning, Dave. Yeah, it's a little early in the day for anyone else besides Sully, maybe. But this is a story about local beer and local history. That's why we played the old Olympia beer commercial a moment ago. You know, one of my other jobs is working for the Washington State Historical Society, a big state agency that operates a museum in Tacoma, has a library and a huge collection of artifacts. I edit their quarterly magazine, Columbia, and so I hear from a lot of people who want to write articles about Northwest history. Last week, I got a call from an attorney in Tacoma named Bill McClure. He's 28. He's from outside Chicago. He's been in the Puget Sound area for less than a decade. I mentioned he's an attorney, but his undergrad degree is in history. So Bill McClure heard last year that the museum was looking for COVID-related artifacts. That's when he started noticing images popping up on the Instagram accounts of the local breweries that he follows.
And those were COVID-themed or pandemic-themed beer cans. And so there's a lot of breweries here in Tacoma, but broadly in the Puget Sound area and across the state that run kind of single batch or one-off beers. And what they started to do was pull on different themes of life adjusting during the global pandemic. So I thought that was really interesting, thought it could be a unique addition to the collection for Washington State Historical Society. So as a result, I started saving the cans. And over time, this just kind of amassed into much more than I expected it to be.
See, that's what historians do. They don't just drink beer. They notice things about the beer they're drinking. Yes. That's why historians are good to have in your community. Now, I'll admit, I'd missed this whole phenomenon. I'd seen all those In These Uncertain Times ads and everything, but I was completely unaware of special packaging. Bill McClure sent me a photo of his collection, which I shared on my Twitter account. Now, a lot of the small batches have funny names like, you know, What Day Is It by Matchless Brewing in Tumwater, or Indoor Survival by Everybody's Brewing down in White Salmon in Clickitat County. Most have original one-off artwork by local artists. You know, one of Bill McClure's favorites is made by Narrows Brewing in Tacoma. The label says Checklist IPA.
It has keys, wallet, which would be, you know, your normal checklist for leaving the house. But in addition, it's got a mask, it's got hand sanitizer, it's got gloves, it's got a ruler, which presumably is, you know, social distancing reminder. So I thought that was interesting because we all kind of have a checklist when we leave the house. We check our pockets, and now, at least at this time, it's you got to have the mask to leave the house, or you got to turn the car around and go get it.
So you know, these are fairly whimsical, and Bill McClure is going to research all these brands and all these pandemic-themed beer cans and put together a history of how it was that so many different local breweries did sort of a similar thing with their products and packaging, and we'll publish that in Columbia maybe a year from now, and I'm looking forward to what he discovers. But this is radio, and I couldn't wait, so I reached out to Matthew Rhodes. He's head brewer at Narrows Brewery in Tacoma. That's home of Checklist IPA and about six other pandemic-themed beers. He said the idea was hatched early in the lockdown, and it was a team effort.
We all kind of gathered together as a crew, obviously social distance, and kind of brainstormed what we could do to kind of reconnect with our drinkers. And we came up with the idea to just kind of reference COVID in a more lighthearted way.
Yeah, it seems like the main idea was to show solidarity with their drinkers. Essentially, you know, we're all in the same boat together. Like many alcohol producers, Narrows Brewing has done well during the pandemic with retail sales and with their taproom in Tacoma. And brewer Matt Rhodes said response to the pandemic cans has been very positive. When I was talking to him, I used the word commemorative to describe the cans, and he said that's not quite the right word. I do think the pandemic-themed cans I've seen are all in good taste. It's not like they're cashing in on COVID or this is some ghoulish thing. But all that being said, do these pandemic cans belong in a museum or a recycling bin? Margaret Weatherby, head of collections for the Washington State Historical Society, says, hold my beer.
It's an object that everyone can relate to. Everybody knows what a beer can is. Little kids, 90-year-olds, everyone knows what this is. And it's something that was created specifically for this time that we're living in.
So she's very excited that this collection's headed her way. And that was something Matt Rhodes of Narrows Brewing was very happy to hear.
It's extremely special. I didn't think that the cans and the labels would make it into a museum.
So the cans and labels will be welcomed at the Historical Society when Bill McClure donates them. But what about the liquid inside?
Well, when I get it initially, it's full. The collection is now empty cans. I made an executive decision what was going to be important for history and what would be important for me.
So Bill McClory.
So for historical reasons, the cans will be empty.
Yeah, so he's sort of slightly selfish historian. And actually, I actually asked Margaret Weatherby, so are you, you know, because sometimes collectors want the can that's full, right? I remember seeing a six-pack of Billy beer at an antique store 20 years ago.
I've told you about my unopened can of Cajun Cola.
Oh, that's right. I'll check with Margaret Weatherby because she told me, we want the empty cans. We don't want to be storing liquid in the museum because, you know, the stuff could explode and get over all those valuable maps and other things they have to take care of. So, I mean, this is an unfolding story, right? The pandemic, we're still in the middle of all of it. And the fact that there's all this packaging from these local breweries that where they employed local artists to do the work, it's if you look at the Spanish flu influenza pandemic of 100 years ago, there's nothing like this. Most museums have very little from that pandemic to show for, maybe a mask, maybe a handbill of some kind. But we'll have these very colorful things. So 100 years from now, people will think, wow, those people sure drank a lot in 2020 and 2021. That'll be the takeaway, probably.
For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity.
For this edition of From the Archives, recalling the years when trains rolled through Bellevue, high above the ground on the Wilburton Trestle.
Don't worry, the train is nowhere near your car, it's just on the radio. That's you here in the studio, along with historian Felix Bunnell, brought to you by the King County Library System. Felix, how far back are we going this morning?
Well, I think 1891 by my calculations. But that was the sound of the Lake Washington, the Spirit of Washington dinner train leaving Renton for the last time 10 years ago this summer. But this week I went in search of downtown Wilburton.
Yes.
Couldn't find it. I don't know where downtown Wilburton was. But the Wilburton Trestle is still there. You know that giant trestle you can see from Interstate 405? Yeah. Well, that was actually opened back in 1905. And it carried us.
That's still the original wood timbers?
It's been replaced a few times. I think as many as four times they've replaced the timbers there. There was a fire back in the 60s, and they cut an overpass through for the Lake Hills Connector back in the early 70s.
Right.
But those tracks that went across there were part of something called the Lake Washington Beltline, which was a way, you know, they built 405 to bypass I-5 in the 1960s and 70s.
Right.
They built a rail line to bypass the congested rail traffic in Seattle 110 years ago. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But the Beltline was built by the Northern Pacific. It served freight and passengers even for a while there in the middle of the century. Trains haven't run there since February of 2008. They sent a freight train, sent up to Boeing. They used to deliver freight to Boeing down at the Renton plant there. But they had to take out a railroad bridge across 405 to expand it.
The back tunnel.
It's the Wilburton Tunnel back in 2008. So I was able to reach out to a guy named Jack Christensen of Edmonds on Monday. He's 90 years old. He used to work for the Northern Pacific. And I asked him, what was it like to go back and forth across that trestle?
There was a trainman's walk on one side, but the other side, you're just looking, you're just like suspended in air, you know, and I don't know what exactly the height of that thing is. It must be 80 or 90 feet anyway. The Wilburton Trestle was pretty solid, and I don't recall any apprehension in crossing it. It was just part of the trip.
Yeah, it's about 1,000 feet long and about 100 feet high. And, Bellevue, of course, is a sprawling metropolis these days. And the view from a Northern Pacific train across that trestle, Jack Christensen made that trip back in 1944, and he told me what it looked like.
Well, there wasn't as much, there weren't any buildings, you know, a couple of farmhouses maybe or small buildings. But Bellevue, as we know it now, just didn't exist.
Yeah.
It was open farmland.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. There. And that was true in the 60s even, really. But the old railroad right-of-way, it's got an interesting past, of course, and it has a pretty exciting future as well. So the right-of-way got sold by Burlington Northern, or BNSF, to the Port of Seattle, who then sold it to King County. Kind of a complicated real estate deal. But there's about a 22-mile stretch that goes from Renton up to Woodinville that's gradually being turned into a trail. They're going to open about 5 miles of it later this year between Renton and Kennedale.
Well, but the part that used to go over the tunnel, what used to be the tunnel, there's a break there.
Yeah, and that in 2020, they're going to build a new bridge that's going to cut across.
Really?
Yeah, for pedestrians and bicycles. It's not going to be
for we're not going to put the hard rail there that would have made a lot more sense to run people into Bellevue.
It seems to me that, we already had a rail line. That train has left the station.
All aboard!
But there are parts of the trail where that is going to be shared with light rail.
Yeah.
In 20, uh, there's part a mile of it through Bellevue is going to carry part of the East Link, and that's going to open in 2023. Then in 2041, part of the route between Kirkland and Issaquah is going to use part of the corridor. It's to be determined. And they're going to study a route between Bothell and Bellevue that would likely use part of that corridor as well, shared between light rail.
Because you go up to Totem Lake, the tracks are still there, right?
Goes all the way to Woodinville. Yeah, pieces of the track. They're going to be removing tracks on about 5 miles of it. There's a big stretch through Kirkland, 6 miles, that's owned by Kirkland where the tracks are gone.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is it's this Lake Washington Beltline that goes this whole route that goes back, 110 years. And right now they call it the East Side Rail Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have some kind of a process to name it. They don't need to have a process. Just call it the Lake Washington Beltline Trail or the BLT.
Yeah.
I think that's the name for it. That's free from Cairo Radio and me to the people working to name this trail here over at King County and
nice
the South.
But between this and the gargoyles, you're going to get your own statue one of these days. Felix.
And it'll be torn down. That'll be great.
That's right.
I'm Felix Bunnell at Cairo Radio in Seattle. Follow me on Twitter and read my stories and see my photo galleries at mynorthwest.com. And please join me again for the next episode of The Resident Historian.
Hi, folks. This is Gene Autry and his Hollywood friends wishing KIRO all the success in the world. So long.